So I would love to welcome E. Michael Jones back to the Stellar Hour. We had our first interview about a year ago. E. Michael Jones is the editor of Culture Wars, has written quite a few books, and I'd like to welcome him back today.
Thank you, Kathy. Good to be back.
So we did a show last year on psychoanalysis and social engineering, and I have to say, I Googled something and I saw my picture up in the corner with you and I saw it had like 16,000 views and I was like, what? And then I looked at it again a few weeks later and it was like 30,000 views and it went up to 40 and I was like, wow. And what was awesome about that is what we talked about is resonating with people. And I think that there's a hunger for people who are seeking others who can help them to make sense of what's happening in the world today. And that's what I love about you and your work. You're so intelligent. You are so grounded in yourself. And you help to set forth a clear path for people to understand what's happening in the world today.
Thank you.
So we talked a little bit before, and I think about, I'm just going to throw it out there. Here's what's been on my mind. What is it that is causing people to choose being degenerate or profane over morality, wisdom, and intelligence? Because it seems to me that we have a choice. However, what I see people choosing is kind of like what's easy or what's degenerate. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, the big picture answer to your question is called original sin. So basically, because of the fall of Adam, we have inherited a weakness. The weakness is basically that we choose a passion over reason. It's just part of the weakness of human nature that results from the fall. So that, given that fact, then you have culture, and culture should be there to make good decisions easy and bad decisions difficult. But we have culture turned on its head in the world we live in, and we have basically a system which uses vice as a form of political control. I discuss this in my book, Libido Dominandi. It's probably the most sophisticated form of control in human history, and it got developed over a period of 200 years, beginning with the French Revolution and the Marquis de Sade. But basically, St. Augustine understood the principle when he wrote The City of God in the 5th century, when he said, a man has as many masters as he has vices. So if you want to be free, then you have to be virtuous. That's the message of St. Augustine. But if you're like the Marquis de Sade and you turn it upside down, the formula comes out. If you want to control people, promote vice. And that's what has happened in our culture. So not only do we have this congenital disposition toward choosing passion over reason, we have a culture that promotes that. Mm-hmm. And promotes the slavery that results from addiction to passion, appetite, and calls it freedom. So it's not surprising why people end up the way they do. The culture is created. It's you're programmed to become a slave to your passions, because then the oligarchs, the people who control the culture, can control you through your passions.
It seems like, you know, I have been doing a lot of research. So I was reading one of your blogs and you were speaking about Abraham Maslow. And I actually went out and found a first edition book of Eupsychian Management, which was fascinating and led me to some work on McLuhan, which also ties into how people's passions are being manipulated through media today.
Right. The big change between the time of the Marquis de Sade and now is technological. So the Marquis de Sade said, "Well, the revolution is being threatened. We have to arouse passion. Let's exhibit women naked in the theaters." Well, okay, that will arouse passion, but you got a technological problem here. Either you have a small theater, in which case you can see the women well. but you don't have a whole lot of people, or you got a big theater in which you can get a lot of people, but you really can't see the women. They're too far away. Technology solved this problem first with the motion picture, then with television, and now with the internet, so that you can bring these pictures of these naked women into your home. And once that happens, then you have an effective form of means of control. So that's what happened now. That's what all these young guys who write to me, they're all addicted to pornography. That's an epidemic in our age. And they're looking to find some way out. And I think the first way out is to explain what it is and what it is not. And what it is not is liberation. And what it is control. And when they read the book, they suddenly wake up to that. And that is the first step in freeing yourself from the addiction, because you know what you're up against, and no one wants to be a slave. And as soon as you realize you're a slave to your passions, you feel this sense of contempt for yourself. And that propels you to act on it. And with the grace of God, you can break that addiction.
You know, after we met last year, I started thinking about, why are humans so sadomasochistic? Why are they punishing themselves? And I think in a way that people are punishing themselves because they know what they're doing is wrong. And it ties into being moral. And I've had people who have attacked me for saying that, like, who do you think you are, Kathy, for talking about morality? You know, do you think you're God? And it's like, but you know what? I'm a human being, and I have a sense as a human as what's moral and what's not.
Well, the best example of that is Michel Foucault. Michel Foucault was a Catholic, a Frenchman, and a homosexual, and grew up in a time when homosexuality was frowned upon in his culture. But as he grew older, the culture, the circles that he traveled in grew more and more tolerant of his behavior. But that didn't change the fact that he knew what he was doing was wrong. And so as the tolerance grew, so also grew his desire to be punished. And when society refused to punish him, he started going to the bathhouses in San Francisco during the 1970s and 80s and got involved in sadomasochism, which is basically a desire to be punished for something you know that is bad. Mm-hmm. So it's not far-fetched what we're talking about. It happens all the time. And Michel Foucault is a good example of it.
Do you think people, I've been thinking about this lately, because it just seems things are getting so extreme. I'm like, we're supposed to be accepting like the tyranny of the minority over the majority. So this is probably going to be really extreme, but the whole LGBTQI, because now I stands for intersex. I don't quite know what that means. And I'm thinking to myself, we care about other people, but I wonder, why is it that, you know, the majority of people are expected to genuflect to like 3% of the population and to accept things that we otherwise wouldn't accept because of this? Does that resonate?
It's because every homosexual is a proxy warrior for the oligarchs. The oligarchs latched on to the CIA, started reading Michel Foucault back in the 1980s. And they are the quintessential deep state institution that represents the interest of the oligarchic control of our culture. And they started realizing that this could be, this group of people could be promoted as a group of proxy warriors who would then be given, privilege, homosexual privilege.
Well, the whole notion of privilege is ridiculous. You know, it's like we're supposed to think like by being born a certain way or living in a place, you have a privilege. It's like the tyranny of the victim. It's like this victim culture and the infantilization of our culture to indulge things. And here we say, oh, like, look at what you've been going through. We're supposed to say, oh, yeah, there's free speech and you can say what you want, but we know it's not true, because to speak the truth, and you and I were talking about this earlier, if you speak the truth about what's going on, you become a pariah in society.
Yes, that's because deviance is constant in a society. There'll never be a society without deviance. The only difference is what gets termed deviance. And so every time you see a rainbow flag, you have this feeling of fear if you're not a homosexual, because what you're seeing is that this is a conquered province of the American empire that gets to impose these values on you, whether you like it or not. And that is precisely, I live a mile away from Notre Dame University. That calls itself a Catholic university, but it's got homosexual flags flying all over the place. And what is the net result of people who live in that environment? Do you know what the net result is? It's fear. It's fear.
And fear is what fuels all this.
That's because the professors, the students, they go around in fear that they're going to be denounced by one of these homosexual tribunals for thought crimes. So what you're seeing here is when they say tolerance, what they're really talking about is repression, is oppression. Because every time you hear the word tolerance, it means that you are being denied your rights if you do not belong to this minuscule minority of privileged proxy warriors. That's what's going on right now. This is all a form of control. And Michel Foucault is the man who understood this principle. And Michel Foucault was a Catholic. And they say when you're baptized, you have an indelible mark on your soul. And there's something true to that, because when he went bad as a Catholic. Jacques Derrida, who was a contemporary of his, also a philosopher, when he went bad as a Jew. And so he attacked the notion of real presence and metaphysics and being and so on and so forth. But when Foucault went bad, he took Christianity and twisted it. So the Christianity's concern for the marginalized person got turned into a valorization of deviance, in particular, mental illness and homosexuality. Now, we've talked about the valorization of homosexuality. What we just saw recently, I don't know where you saw it, but in the United Nations, we saw the valorization of mental illness in the person of Greta Thunberg. I don't know whether you saw this exchange on Fox News, but the one commentator begins by saying this is a mentally ill child, and the other commentator just throws all caution to the wind and denounces him, says, you've got to apologize for saying that, you know, and he didn't apologize. So Fox News canned him. They apologized, said it was appalling what I said, and they say we'll never be invited back. Well, let's take a deep breath here. This lady, this little 16-year-old girl brags about her mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother wrote a memoir bragging about, what do I mean by bragging about the mental illness? Well, she took a page right out of Foucault. And because she's mentally ill, she has some great visionary capacity. So what she said was that basically Greta can see carbon dioxide.
I know.
I'm not
kidding.
This is in her book. Greta can see carbon dioxide rising up out of the chimneys and so on and so forth. She's a visionary. She's a visionary because she's a lunatic. You know, I mean, lunatic is an old word. But the point here is that she then goes on to say, well, she's got autism, she's got Asperger's syndrome, she's got blah, blah. They go down the list one after another. And that makes her special, and that makes her a kind of visionary prophet that will now get to tell us what to do. This is all preposterous, but it goes back to what we're talking. It goes directly back to Foucault. And I mean directly, because Foucault in 1955 moved to Sweden. Great as a Swedish schoolgirl. And Sweden was the headquarters, the world paradigm of social engineering in 1955. Mm-hmm. We got the idea from them, actually, because it was Gunnar Myrdal who came over here during World War II, right before World War II, and wrote the book The American Dilemma, which is the Bible of social engineering in the United States. So Foucault goes there. Because he's drawn to a country that is tolerant of sexual deviance. That's pretty much what Sweden's reputation was at this point. Yeah. And then when he arrives there, he actually wrote Madness and Civilization in Sweden as a doctoral dissertation. When he gets there, he's unhappy. Why is he unhappy? Well, because they're tolerant. He would prefer to be punished. And he did write a book about punishment, you know, later on, which fit in precisely with his behavior sadomasochistic behavior in the bathhouses of San Francisco. But what I'm saying here is that what you have here is the same type of thing now with a girl from Sweden who is supposed to lead us, not in spite of the fact that she has mental problems, but because of the fact that she has mental problems.
Absolutely. You know, Ellen McClay wrote a book in the 1950s called Bats in the Belfry, in which she said, she brought in Jonathan Rowling Reese's work, who said, we're going to shape society through psychiatry or mental illness, right? Or through the DSM. And so what I see happening now is this whole thing of neurodiversity, which is what Greta says. I'm neurodiverse. I'm like, what does that even mean? It means nothing. It's like a made-up word. So we're supposed to accept this as being the standard and normal. And so it's as if, though, we are expected to accept people who distort reality as being the standard for reality.
Right. Right. What is the basis of our what we are doing right now and basically every other human activity? The basis is logos, which is speech, which is reason. We are having a discussion based on reason. Mm-hmm. What is someone who is mentally disturbed is someone who cannot reason properly. So why is someone who is not cannot reason properly being promoted as our leader? As a leader, well, because they want to manipulate us, because mm-hmm. they do not want us to engage in rational activity, mm-hmm. because what we're doing right now exposes the fallacy and the real agenda behind what they're promoting, which is irrationality as a form of control. That's mm-hmm. why the oligarchs love Foucault, because he valorizes irrationality. And they love that because once you're irrational, they can lead you around by the nose or any other appendage or another appendage, which is even more likely to lead you around. So that's what we're saying here. It goes also to the Jeffrey Epstein case, which is basically luring prominent men, influential men, into situations of where they're sexually compromised and can be blackmailed. So you see it across the board here.
Yeah, it goes into it's like the whole thing on advertising, propaganda. It gets people to operate from the lowest sense of self, like through the exploitation of their sexuality. It's almost as if, though, it exacerbates that with people. So instead of operating from the higher aspects of self, they operate from the lowest aspects of self.
Right. And the point here is to prohibit rationality. In
yes.
some way or other, because rationality always poses a threat to the people in charge. It always poses a threat, and shared rationality is a bigger threat. And so what you have is basically the interdiction of communication on YouTube, for example. This is I've talked about this. I have a book out called Jewish Privilege. The ADL is behind this so-called campaign against hate speech. They made it up. They made up this bogus term called hate speech, which basically comes down to anything that the ADL, any type of speech the ADL does not like. This is also a form of psychological warfare waged against the majority of everybody on the internet, because psychological warfare is the prohibition of unauthorized communication between subject peoples. That's what it is. Suddenly there was a new avenue of communication opened up on the internet, and these people rush in now to shut it down because there are too many people who know too much and they're not following the plan. It's not following the script that was prepared for them by the ADL and other organizations.
It seems like people are starting to realize the whole Club of Rome, limits to growth, global warming, which Frank Luntz turned into climate change. People are like, starting to recognize that this isn't real. What will happen next? As people, more and more people are coming to realize, and they see through the whole Greta thing, which is to me preposterous. What's going to happen next?
Good question. I'll look. My crystal ball is in the other room, so I have to go out. But I think that what in order to understand what happened next, we should understand what happened now. Or let's take it more specifically. What about Greta Thunberg? Where did she come from? What is that all about? And it turns out that there is a rational explanation here. If you read her mother's memoir, She wrote, Melania Ehrman was a famous opera singer in Sweden. Mm-hmm. She was living La Dolce Vita in Sweden, traveling around from one capital to another. You know, she was just part of the elite and enjoying life. And she had the two children and she had adulation from everyone. And then the adulation just took an exponential leap forward when she won the Eurovision Song Contest in Moscow in 2009. She became really famous then and really sought after. And that was when Greta was 6 years old. And 2009, yeah, she's 6 years old. In 2014, she turns 11 and she stops eating. Now, what do you think happens when you turn 11 in Sweden? I mean, anywhere else on this planet when you're a female? She started to go through puberty.
Right.
Okay. Now, at this point, there's the family falls apart. That's not right. It doesn't fall apart, but her career falls apart because now she's got to go home and prepare meals for Greta. So what is Greta doing here? She's got an elaborate way of getting mommy back into the kitchen. And that was important in Sweden because Sweden pretty much abolished motherhood. I said they were the capital of social engineering. Over the period of, let's say, 1965 to 73, they built 1 million housing units and wow. changed the entire population from a rural population to an urban population. And over this period of time, the amount of time that women had to spend in the home taking care of the house went from 14 hours a day to 4 hours a day. And that means the women had 10 hours to spare now, and they immediately went off and rushed out and got careers. And they all got jobs outside the home. And at this point, there's no one there, you know? So we have an exaggerated example of this.
Exactly. It doesn't, I want to bring this whole thing up. It doesn't take a village to raise a family. A child wants its mother. It doesn't want a substitute. So this whole, like Margaret Mead did a documentary on Lifestyles for the Future. And in it, she's promoting like the communist model, like other people take care of your children. Well, if you look at the children in the video, they're scared. They don't want strangers taking care of them. They want their moms taking care of them. And it's a really challenging thing, I think, for women to navigate through today. It's like, what's my role in the world? It's like it's been so manipulated through culture that people don't know, like, what does it mean to be a woman in the world, to be a mother in the world?
It means nothing because gender is a social construct. And all you have to do is go to Notre Dame and you can pay $65,000 a year to become stupid by learning things like gender is a social construct. And not only will you become stupid, you will become unhappy and stupid at the same time, even, no matter how much money you make, because this is not the way things are. And proof of it is Greta Thunberg. Basically,
when do you think she'll start transitioning?
See, this you had a not so then Mrs. Ehrman, Melania, her mother, goes into looking into this. My daughter's mentally ill. I wonder if other people, and it turns out there's an epidemic of mental illness in Sweden. And guess what? It begins with girls reaching puberty. Well, wait a minute. And so you know what conclusion she comes to?
What?
She said, well, what happened is that Greta saw a film about plastic floating in the Pacific Ocean and their entire class burst into tears. And this is why she stopped eating.
You know, it also reminds me of John Money, who was also very involved in this. And John Money is the one who came up with Munchausen by proxy. And I wonder about some of these parents with the whole concept of Munchausen by proxy, if parents aren't gaining attention for themselves by indulging their children in these beliefs that they are what they aren't.
Well, what you had here is one career ends and suddenly Melania gets a second career as the environmental activist by promoting her child. Mm-hmm. As the I hate to say this, the idiot savant. I mean, the child who can see carbon dioxide, the visionary, you know, the mystical climate change visionary. Well, that's what she is. That's what she is because she's mentally ill. But what if you get back to the real story, it turns out that first of all, mom's not at home. Secondly, my body is going through all kinds of strange changes. I don't know what to think. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thirdly, okay, now this is where it really becomes complicated. Sweden is the pioneer in sex education. Okay. So now, in Melania's generation, Melania was born in 1970, and the film, the classic sex ed film in Sweden came out in 1969. It's basically a lot of, you know, professors going blah, 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 and then there's a couple having sexual intercourse, and you get graphic detail. Yeah. It's graphic detail of this couple having sexual intercourse. Now, from the point of view of an 11-year-old, it looks like grown-ups having sexual intercourse. So even though it's explicit, it's kind of, well, that's something that grown-ups do, okay? Now, the problem here is that Greta didn't see that film. What they did was they changed the film. They changed the sex ed film. Now, remember, this is mandatory for every single girl in Sweden. Uh-huh. Because they all go to public schools, and this is what has been mandated by the state. So now the film is a cartoon.
Oh.
Okay, now, in this sense, it's not as explicit, okay, as a film. But in this instance, it is explicit because they're portraying sexual organs, cartoon versions of sexual organs. But the difference is now you've got young people engaging in sexual intercourse.
And, you know,
This puts pressure on these kids now, more pressure than before, because now this is something that you're supposed to be doing. And so when they do a survey of the Swedish children, it turns out that 96% of the girls surveyed don't like the sex ed program because it doesn't deal with sexual harassment and sexual assault, which means they're all being subjected to some type of sexual assault at the time, at the most vulnerable period in their lives. This, it seems to me, is more reason why these girls are going crazy. If you want to find out why mental illness and eating disorders are spreading, look into this rather than pieces of plastic floating in the Pacific Ocean.
It goes into a lack of emotional safety and a lack of understanding of mind into mind, which is essential for children to have a secure sense of themselves. They need the mother and the father too, but more so in the first part of life, for the mother to mirror back to the child the sense of self, and for the mother to help to self-regulate the child. So right. When the mother's not available to do that, or the mother has taken in what culture tells her is true, which we know is not, then the mother's mirroring back incorrect information to the child. And
right.
It causes this, like Eric Fromm said, you know, who has his major own issues, Sapiens is insane. But I think people are driven insane through culture.
I think this is what happened. I mean, the statistics are there. You have an epidemic of mental illness and eating disorders among Swedish children. Well, it can't just be one family then as the cause.
Right.
I mean, maybe you've got, this is not just, well, you have a neurotic mother or something like that. No, you wouldn't have 96% to 80% of people showing up at the psychiatric clinic. That you wouldn't have that. So there's something systemic about this. And so what you see here is basically a projection away from the pathology that they cannot talk about. Because if you're going to be a good Swede, you cannot mm-hmm. question the social engineering that created paradise on earth. Greta can't talk about it. So you got a situation here where mom feels guilty and the daughter feels full of rage.
Absolutely. And rage is the genesis. And you know, the other thing, I saw a video of the mother performing at that Euro thing, over the top, over sexualized, very feminine. And then you look at her daughter, very asexual, right? No expression of her femininity. And so I think we're seeing this also where these children are being taught that, girls especially, that their femininity is something that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I tried to understand. I watched that Eurovision performance too. She was gorgeous. Crazy. You know, Melania looks gorgeous. She's got a great voice. It's very sexy. She's very sexy looking on that thing. And I tried to imagine what would a 6-year-old girl feel about that person as her mother? How would she feel?
Intimidated
that she'll never be able to be as sexy and as attractive as her mother. So therefore, mm-hmm. I'm not even going to try. Mm-hmm. I think that what she said was, you know, everybody loves my mommy, but why doesn't my mommy spend time with me? I know.
Why doesn't my mommy love me?
Why doesn't my mommy love me? Everybody loves my mommy. Why doesn't my mommy love me? If my mommy loved me, she'd spend more time with me. She doesn't spend time with me, therefore she doesn't love me. I think this is the type of thought process we have here. So it led to a completely untenable situation. The family life became hell on earth because the two daughters became neurotic, completely neurotic, at the onset of puberty. And the parents did not know how to deal with it. And the girls then engage in obsessive compulsive behavior as a way of bringing the world under control. Mm-hmm. So the mother goes into a long explanation of how it takes 2 hours to walk 3 blocks to get Beata to school because she can't step on cracks on the sidewalk. And if she starts off with her right foot, she has to go back and start off with her left foot. Completely neurotic behavior. But the point here is she's trying to get control.
Absolutely.
Because everything is out of control. Mom's not here. My body's out of control. And the state is telling me to have sex with these predatory kids in my class. This is crazy. I'm checking out. You know, I'm going to stop eating. And that's what she does. And so you have a standoff in the family where mom's consumed with guilt and Greta's consumed with hatred. And it can't go on this way. And then suddenly they discover climate change. Climate change suddenly solves all of these problems. Melania says that, you know, climate change in Africa, it causes drought, but in Sweden, it causes mental illness. So we found the key that unlocks every door, and now we can become allies in this noble battle against climate change, which is really the source of all of our problems.
So it allows people to project out here what's happening in here, but it's not them. So they don't have to look at themselves. They see what's happening outside of themselves and they can blame that, but they don't have to change anything within their own selves. They don't have to look at themselves. And that's the brilliance too of the DSM. So if we look at the DSM, it allows inadequate parenting to be deemed as ADHD or ADD or oppositional defiance or whatever it might be. So instead of really looking at the fact that it's the breakdown of relationships between ourselves and our ability to interact the way that we should with each other, I know it doesn't sound right, but the way for like parents to be really present for their children and to be able to regulate them, to be present with them, to help them understand what's happening in the world, it becomes something outside of that. It's like, no, you've got ADHD. Yeah, you need to take Adderall. You've got something wrong with you. It has nothing to do with us.
Well, in many ways, the term mental illness is a form of what we're talking about here. Because what the psychiatric profession did was basically intervene into behavior that is basically asocial behavior. It is irrational behavior. The quintessential irrational behavior is sin. Okay? Sin is basically going against the moral order, which is practical reason. This is irrational behavior, and if you persevere in this irrational behavior long enough, you will become permanently irrational, and that's known as being crazy. So it leads to this. The Marquis de Sade talked about this. Other people talked about it. So what you had here was something like DSM. First of all, was to take, let's say, homosexuality. That was immoral behavior. Well, they medicalized it and said it was a mental illness. And then in 72, they said, no, it's not a mental illness anymore. Now it's normal. So we're talking about a long range generational, transgenerational project, which basically demoralized the entire population by turning what used to be immorality into illness.
Absolutely. Well, think of alcoholism. There's this whole thing that like alcoholism is a disease. The medicalization of it is a choice. And so people are being told that, oh, no, you have a disease. You know, it has nothing to do with you. You have no power over it. You can't change it. Now it becomes epigenetic. It's in your genetics now, too. Right? There's nothing you can do.
Well, that's exactly what our illustrious gay mayor of South Bend is saying. He said he attacked Mike Pence and he said, God made me this way. Your argument is with my maker if you disagree with homosexuality. So the funny this was on YouTube. And then you go down to the comments and the first comment is, don't blame God, you faggot. And they all go down this line, you know, and then finally Chasten, his whatever, his partner in crime, says the same thing. And then I'm thinking, boy, what's going to the comment going to be now? You go down, comments have been disabled because nobody was buying it. I'm sorry, nobody's buying that. We all know that you are responsible for your actions. And the only reason you're cooking up any type of theological justification is to let yourself off the hook of your own immoral behavior. It's that simple.
But people don't want to believe that. And so I think we're really in a dangerous part, a dangerous place in society right now.
If you say why, who, people, let's go back to Sigmund Freud. Mm. Sigmund Freud is one of the main people responsible for the medicalization of immorality. Mm-hmm. The incident that finally came out was the incident concerning Horace Frink, who was an American medical doctor who wanted to be a psychiatrist. And in order to become a psychiatrist, you had to be psychoanalyzed by Freud. So he flew to Vienna at this point. And during the course of his psychoanalysis, he admitted that he was having an affair with one of his wealthy patients. Of course, all patients were wealthy at that point because they were the only people who had psychological problems. So Freud at this point, instead of saying, well, that's unethical. This contradicts the ethical standards of psychoanalysis, blah, blah, blah. No, he didn't say that. He said, what you should do is divorce your wife, marry this rich woman, and then give me a big contribution. This shows you what it was. It was always a form of control. In other words, sure, I'll absolve you from following the moral law, but then you become my slave. Mm. Then you have to pay me by the hour for psychoanalysis to relieve your guilty conscience. That's what they were doing. Not only Freud was doing it and Jung was doing it. Mm-hmm. And both of these guys were competing for wealthy Americans. That was the game that they played. Freud was in Vienna and Jung at that point had gone back to Switzerland. But that was the game that both of these men were playing. Who can get the richest American to fund their psychiatric institute?
Well, and then Bernays took that information and exploited it through advertising.
Right. And Eddie Bernays was Sigmund Freud's nephew.
Right. And so I think about this, and it's like this whole perpetuation then of the exploitation of sexuality, the use of consumerism to meet unmet emotional needs. And so instead of people being in touch with themselves and becoming more responsible for themselves, everything's still outside of themselves, and they're seeking to meet, they're seeking other people to change to make them okay, and then they're seeking to meet their needs through consumerism.
Yes. Yes. That's pretty much the story of the 20th century.
Do you think people are going to get bored though? I mean, I look at it and I think to myself, is there a part where people get like so like just degeneracies, just like it becomes boring for them, and they're gonna it may cause people to come back and to say, what else is there?
Sure, you can always, I mean, I mentioned those young guys who are kicking the pornography habit. Mm-hmm. Once you explain what's going on to them, they do. You always have a choice in the matter, and the choice is either to get better or get worse, because nobody stays the same. And mm-hmm. so the same people, so you can kick the pornography habit and you can lead a normal life because you kicked it by the grace of God, or you can go deeper into it. And the Marquis de Sade has an answer here too for you. He says, if you feel guilty, the solution to guilt is to commit another offense that's even worse than the one you just committed. Now, this is not going to go on forever, because all of this, there's a trajectory that he understands very well. So it's, and it leads to death. Basically, sins of passion then lead to crimes, and crimes lead to murder. And that's the trajectory that he sketches out. And that's the trajectory that you find. He was right. He was right. Because he, all he's doing is talking about what St. James said. These are Christian people. And they understood what St. James said, that passion gives birth to a child, and that child is death. And so sin leads to death. That the wages of sin is death. That's the way St. Paul put it. The Marquis de Sade said exactly the same thing from a different perspective, but that's the trajectory that we're talking about here. Yes, that's it.
What do you think people can do? So I consider this a lot, because bringing up truth to people often invokes cognitive dissonance, or you're not tolerant, or negative feedback from others. What are things that you see that are working that people can do to help others to become aware, so we can stop, we could perhaps shift the trajectory that we're on?
You have to open yourself to rationality.
What makes a person want to do that?
Because, well, we all want to know the truth. We all have this deep desire to know some type of ultimate reality, to get to the bottom of things. I mean, this is what detective stories are about. Why are people interested in murder mysteries? Because there's an unresolved conflict and they want to get to the bottom of it. What did Oedipus? Oedipus is about this. You know, he shows up, I'm going to get to the bottom of this thing. I'm going to find out who's responsible. We all have this desire. You know, we have this desire to know things, and it's being thwarted by our passions, which are making us stupid. And so therefore, if you start opening the gates of rationality, people will desire it more and more. And then they will come to you and say, you know, you're right. I got this problem. It was only after I listened to you that I realized the depth of the problem and the source of it. And now I want to get rid of it. So they do it on their own. I don't have to tell 20-year-olds that they're addicted to pornography. That's one mm-hmm. thing I do not have to do. I guarantee mm-hmm. it.
I can't help but wonder, with what's happening with the whole Greta narrative, that people are really beginning to see through it, because it's so outrageous. And what you spoke about is so important, about her playing a role in the family in the same way that anorexics do this in families. I mean, like, family systems therapy talks about this. Salvador Minichin talked about it. And of course, family systems therapy comes from cybernetics, which is interesting. But it's the way for the child to control the family. And so when you talk about her sister not wanting to step on cracks, that I think about this whole notion of tolerance is saying, if we speak about what we're speaking about today, it's like we're doing that same type of thing. We're acting out. We're not allowed to do that.
No, I think what Beata did there was take one of the most powerful and famous women in the world and subject her to a completely irrational form of behavior. It was pure, unadulterated control over her mother, based on her mother's feelings of guilt. Is that what you're? We're not doing that. We're doing the opposite of that. We're coming in and saying, look, this is the real reason you feel this way, you know. Melania, you feel this way. It's you are part of a bigger picture here, and the bigger picture in this instance is the Swedish commitment to the social democrat commitment in Sweden to create heaven on earth through social engineering. And you entered it into a, you were born in 1970, which was basically when the obscenity battle had been won by these people. so that you now had unlimited access to pornography and you didn't understand the social consequences of that. You were also, feminism triumphs at this point, so you had opportunities that to get out of the house that other women didn't have. All we're trying to do here is put it in some type of rational perspective so that everybody can understand it, including Melania and Greta, who are basically co-enablers of this, you know, kind of, they're both wardens in each other's prison right now, you know? And the thing that they're committed to is this completely irrational understanding of climate change, you know? So it's not going to succeed. Just think of the net result of this narrative, for example, is you bring Greta over, and basically what Greta does is blow up the entire climate change narrative. That's what she did, because they all pushed it too far. People started to look into it, and now we realize, well, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. So this is the way, I think this is the way things work. I think this is the way God works in human history. You know, he brings these opportunities, and if we have the eyes to see, we can expose it, and then we advance our agenda basically with their energy. You know, that's the energy that we got. We got this push because of their violation of the moral law, and it's their evil that allows us to explain the good. And once we explain it, then the good begins to triumph over their evil.
Yes, and their evil is their form of arrogance. So I'm going to go off on a tangent a little bit here. And I'm not seeking to vilify men or women. But what comes to me, and I was reading a book about this on, it was called So the Witch Won't Eat Me. It's an old book. And the author, Dorothy, basically posits that there's really no such thing as Mother Nature, that women don't have an inherent biological intent to nurture their children. And I look around and I kind of wonder about that. It's like, how could human beings be born and there's no maternal instinct, but we see other mammals around us that take better care of their children than human beings do?
Well, the answer is because human beings have choice and animals do not when it comes to something like this. But
Do you think it's a choice? Like, what happens when you're born into so this goes into the intergenerational thing. What happens when a child is born into a family and the child learns from its mother, like, dysfunctional patterns, and then that woman gets married and has children and perpetuates? I mean, how do we begin to start to shift this? Because it seems like people are taking the dysfunctional pattern as being the normative pattern.
Well, you're born into a situation over which you have no control whatsoever. That's known as being an infant. That's known as being a child. Okay, you have no control over your environment. That is why you're vulnerable, and that is why you need to be protected from people who want to exploit you for one way or another. Okay, now if your mother is defective in some way or other, it's going to have an expression on your development. There's nothing we can do about that. The only way you can do this would be to abolish human freedom. And you can't do that either. Mm-mm. You know, you can't do it. So when you're a salmon, you don't choose to have sex. You have chemical processes that go off and you turn around and start swimming upstream. Certain mammals have estrus, which means you basically don't have a choice. If you see the dog jump over the fence, he's heading off. He smells those pheromones and he's on his way. There's no choice in the matter here at all. You see it in other animals. I just watched the video of Siegfried and Ray. You know, they had all these tigers. They're walking around with tigers and everything's fine until you make one false move and you confuse the tiger and suddenly instinct kicks in, overtraining, and you're dead. So Roy stumbles. The tiger was not expecting Roy to stumble. Roy falls on his back and the tiger grabs him around the neck because he has no choice in the matter. That's the difference between animals and human beings. We have choice, which means we can screw it up. You know, it also means that we are far superior to anything that an animal can do because we can understand the reason why we're supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, their sexuality is kind of halfway. Human sexuality is kind of halfway between this kind of angelic rationality and animal mechanisms like estrus, We're kind of halfway in between because we have bodies, but we have reason as well. And the whole point of a successful life is to subject to become as rational as possible. And I don't mean in some phony enlightenment sense of that term. Okay, I'm not talking about some bogus scientific truncation of rationality. I'm talking about real rationality, logos. And that is the whole point of a successful life. And if you put the child in the proper environment, but first of all, that child needs that environment. There's no way, the child cannot succeed unless the mother affirms his or her being, worth, value, whatever it is, at certain crucial points in life. The child will not develop if it doesn't
happen.
There's no way around it, and that's that simple. And feminism, which emptied the home of the mother, caused a huge psychological perturbation in all of the countries that took it seriously. And Greta Thunberg is an expression of this. Greta Thunberg is a comment on Swedish social engineering. It has nothing to do with the environment. Nothing. Nothing. It has to do with her relationship, her disturbed relationship with her mother because of the Swedish commitment to feminism and sexual liberation. That's the entire story.
It's really fascinating because attachment theory is something that's really interesting to me. And the whole notion of when a child is born, it's not fully developed. Its nervous system isn't fully developed and it develops in relationship with the mother. So to the degree that the child, the mother is more sensitively attuned to the child and can respond to the child and helps the child to manage his emotional state, the child develops more fully. It develops the prefrontal cortex, the hippocampus, and it creates a level of security. The child can then go out and explore and to learn and to grow and to be healthy. And yet it seems like in our society today, we really don't support that. We've been inculcated to underestimate that importance of that mother and child relationship, to think it could be done in daycare. And I'll tell you, I feel guilty about it myself. I worked when my daughter was younger. If I knew then what I know today, I would not have chosen what I chose then.
That's
but
right.
I was brainwashed. I believed it.
We were all pressured into acting in a certain way. And now we are starting to understand what that was all about. And that's why we're having this conversation now, so that other people don't end up in the same trap, make the same mistakes that we did over this period of time. Greta's mother is 1 year older than my oldest son. So that's where I fit in with this kind of a transgenerational trajectory, and I know the forces that were the forces that were brought to bear on me at this particular time, and I knew that I had to resist them. So that when he was born, my wife quit her job, and we didn't have any money. We were the poorest people in Philadelphia, but we knew that this was more important than any type of money. And eventually the money comes back, you know, it's not as if you're going to be poor forever. It's not as if you're going to be, you know, a 23-year-old father for the rest of your life. No, that doesn't work that way, you know? And so we, the people who have been through it, need to tell these people that, yeah, this is a big deal, but that's not a big deal. Give them the right sense of priorities, because they're missing that. I don't know why, but they're missing that. They're not getting it. Certainly you're not going to get it from any educational institution. Never. It's not going to happen. You know, and if your parents succumbed to that thing and ruined their lives and your lives in the meantime, well, you know, there's a way out. You can think your way out of this thing, you know, with the grace of God. And that's your goal in life. That's your job to do that.
I really think it is. I wrote something about this the other day. It really is our job to gain back our sanity. So to your point, you can be born into a family where you might not have had what you needed, but we still do have choices. Even when it seems like we don't, we do, because we're human.
Right. That's right.
And that's what makes it different. It can seem really difficult. And it goes into this thing, like I've been looking at a lot of stuff's been coming up about the Overton window. And it reminds me of something called the Perceived Weirdness Index by John O'Hanifin. And she says that you can be what's so weird, and then people will accept you or they won't accept you. So if you're too weird, people won't accept you. Same thing with the Overton window. New ideas can come in, and if those new ideas are too radical, people are going to reject them. So how can we help people to understand that what we're talking about that kind of can seem old-fashioned is not, because it really ties into what human needs are and what people are being conditioned to accept really isn't human, it's transhuman. To think that you're going to have your needs met through technology, you're going to have your needs met because you're fluid. You can be a boy one day and a girl the next day. You know, that's not being human.
No. No, it's an illusion that is cultivated by people in power to control you. It's that simple, because you have no basis to object. If you can be whatever you want to be, if there's no being, if there's no logos here, then you can't say, well, that's wrong, because logos is based on right and wrong. So we're not dealing with a universe of infinite possibilities. We're dealing with a universe where things are what they are. And mm-hmm. You are what you are. You're known as a human being. And a human being has a particular type of nature, mm-hmm. which involves rationality. And you will only be happy if you conform to that nature. If you try to be a bear or a female when you're a male or anything like that, you will not be happy, because that's not what you are. You have to conform, you have to find the logos of what you are, and then you have to choose that, and that will allow you to become who you really are. It's that simple. It's not infinite possibilities here. You know, there's male, there's female, you know, there's two right there, two basic, and if you don't accept those categories, well, then you're in trouble. You're living in a world of illusion, and you will be unhappy.
That seems so simple, and yet it's so true.
Thank you. I try to make things as simple as possible, but no simpler.
Well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed this. And I think there's really something to be said about the importance of being who you are, which is human.
That's right.
And not to be who you're not.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure to be with you, Kathy.
Thank you. You too. Have a nice evening.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.